welcome to Lang Time Chat, episode 39.
Yay!
That is an appropriate level of excitement.
I can translate that into Finnish, too. Yay!
That was perfect. all right, so this episode, I decided to make it a little fun.
Okay.
It's another trivia one for David. So I have compiled some trivia, and I used GramBank, which has more recently been, I think I'm not saying this incorrectly, more recently been released to the general public online. They've been working on it for a really long time, but I don't think we had access to all of its features. And now we do. And so I thought, what better way to get to know it than to make trivia to put David on the spot?
That's a great idea. And of course, there's going to be some prizes associated with this trivia contest. If Jessie wins, she gets her choice of soft drink, which I will provide for her. If I win, on the other hand, we're going to add a series of implosives to the dog language.
Wow. Go ahead, and I will write sound changes to kill them all, just like the uvulars. They will be gone. All right, so in all seriousness, no, this was a lot of fun.
All right.
For anyone who doesn't know, and if you are looking at the video, I did include just a screenshot of what the website looks like in case you land on it and wonder, like, did I find the right thing?
And what's the URL?
Well, just a second. I believe that's on one of the next slides.
Okay, good.
You can Google GramBank, but it's not Graham like our beloved Graham. It's G-R-A-M, as in grammar, and then bank. And it apparently goes by some other names, because I remember at one point it pulled up another name and I was not prepared to see it. And it may have been Glotto Bank or Phono Bank or something. But anyway, like, those are all apparently part of this larger GramBank project. And so here we go. I put the website specifically for the features list. So this is not the homepage that I just showed you, but if you clicked on the menu option that said features, it would take you to this URL. And so grambank.clld.org would be the homepage.
Yep.
And then if you add the / parameters, you go to the features page, which is where I'm focusing.
Right on.
So that is the website. Again, you can also Google it. You'll get there. So one thing I want to say is that these features, unlike walls, right? So I think a lot of you are familiar with the World Atlas of Linguistic Structures online. They also have a features list. They also have maps. So like GramBank and walls are very similar in those ways. But unlike walls, each of the features is set up as a yes-no question. And so languages are coded as either having the feature, not having the feature, or like question mark, as in like more work is needed on the language. And so they're basically using documentation of languages to identify whether these features are present or absent. I will say, though, there is one exception, because as I was going through GramBank, I did see one question where it was like, basically, what is the order of demonstratives to nouns? And so it was not a yes-no question. It was like, it's either demonstrative noun, noun demonstrative, both, or not known.
Should have been, you know, present, as in it has an order. Absent, it doesn't. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. As we do this trivia, we're going to have some visual cues for anybody who sees the slideshow or watches the video. We're not going to just use these cute little bullet points that are my little mouse working behind a computer ears. That's going to be reserved for the not known.
Okay.
We're going to have Ozi Yamoza for absent, as in nope, it's as absent as Ozi Yamoza in Ingala. a little fox with a pencil, if it's present, because that means, yep, the feature is noted in this language. And then the working mouse, if it's not known, because it needs more study.
Mm-hmm.
Got to send that mouse back to work.
Yep. All right.
And so that's going to help us here as I do this. Okay. So we're going to also focus on some recent features that, as we've been talking about the dog language and talking about nouns, we've had some questions where it's like, well, how common is this really? And so I was like, how cool. I'll tie that in and I'll really focus in on some of these noun and pronoun features that we've been asking about recently anyway. And so here we go. Mm-hmm. David.
Yeah.
Your task.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a feature.
Okay.
You got to decide whether the majority of Grand Banks documented natlangs have the feature or don't have the feature. The way they do it in their system, it's always no, then yes, because it's a zero for absent, a one for yes, yeah, and then a question mark. And so the no will always be on top.
Okay, but like, so one of the answers isn't going to be not known?
You don't have to guess that.
Okay.
Because it's always going to be a much smaller percentage that is not known.
Oh,
all right. Of the other ones, in most cases. And so you won't have to guess, like, that won't be. Your job is to say, for the ones they do know, do you think it's more present or not?
That's too bad. I like the little mouse.
Oh, it'll be there. I'll bring it back. It's just you're not guessing.
Got it. All right.
Okay. Here we go. So the very first feature that you come to is this one. Are there definite or specific articles? So a couple things here. Each feature is given a number. So if you're mm-hmm. like on the website, this is feature GB, Grand Bank, 020. And so okay. it's really feature 20 is what you're looking at. For this particular one, if you go into the features article, you'll see a note where the, because definite or specific article, so like in English we have the morpheme that they're talking about though has to mark definiteness or specificity without also conveying spatial deixis. And so in other words, some languages will overlap and use demonstratives as a sort of definite marker. But if they do that, then they do not have a separate definite or specific article. English is a language that would be coded one as, yeah, it's there because we have the, and then we also have this and that separately for, you know, demonstrative uses. And so, David.
What about Turkish? It has a definite accusative.
Well, that's a wonderful question.
Because it doesn't have anything to do with spatial deixis.
Well, then I think it would count.
All right, but it's an accusative.
They do count in certain ones where it's like if it shows up in cases, like then it will count. So I would think it would count.
All right.
But I mean, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm answering this off the top of my head.
And then also, what's the, what's the, like, is this all languages? Like, what are they working with?
Almost every feature has somewhere between 2,300 and 2,400 documented languages.
That is a fair amount. Okay, I'm going to say absent.
All right. Dun, 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 dun. And if you're playing along at home, get your answer set in your head, because I'm about to tell you David's right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. He's doing a dance. Oh, no.
1-4-1. Woo!
Okay.
So, bah. That's my implosive B. Get ready for it. Bah, bah, bah. Bark.
So out of, for this particular feature, they were looking at just over 2,400 entries. And so looking at, you know, for languages. And about 57% of them did not have a definite or specific article associated with it. And so the majority do not. About 34% had it, so 824 languages. And like I said, that includes English. And then about 205 languages or 9% of them need more work because they're not sure. It isn't clear in the grammar or like it just straight up didn't really talk about articles.
Mm.
And so that there you go. Now.
Right on.
So to wrap that up, most natlangs don't mark definiteness separate from other features such as deixis. But an example or a couple examples from languages that do have definite articles include, and so these, they also give you examples, and that's the funnest part, I think.
All right.
I don't know if it's Aiton or Aiton.
I'm going to say Aiton.
Aiton.
That's my guess.
An Aiton example, this is from Mori's work in 2005. And it shows this example, Manan Amat Newa, where it literally breaks down into time that minister definite articles say. And so it's like then the minister said. So it's really timed that. So at that time, the minister, or minister definite article, and then said. Hmm. So ne is the definite article, and it follows the noun.
What's ah?
You know, that's a wonderful question, and it's probably something I accidentally deleted when I was formatting.
Ah.
You know, like copy paste, right, and yeah, then I was formatting, and I probably accidentally deleted something. So David's pointing out that it's ma time, non that, and then there's an ah, and I don't know what the ah is there for.
Yeah.
And it probably is in the original article, and I did a boo-boo.
We're going to guess how it's pronounced. Manana mat ne wa. Just going to guess.
My God, that sounded wonderful. All those iTone speakers, I'm sure, would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is one example. So that's, you can get definite articles following nouns as their own units. Of course, they can precede as their own units as well. But they can also attach to the nouns, like in these Ganda examples from Crabtree 1902. I love this from so long ago. Where there are these examples, Entebbe ebiri, which means chair, and then ebiri breaks down into the a prefix, is the definite marker, and then beauty is two, so it means the two chairs, the specific two chairs. If you just wanted to say two chairs in general, you would drop that a prefix and you would just say entebbe beauty for two chairs.
Very cool.
Question number two. Do indefinite nouns commonly have indefinite articles? So back on this article business. So definite marker is like the, indefinite in English, we have a and an. And so do the majority of the languages surveyed here have indefinite markers?
That one's tougher. I'm going to say it's going to be much closer, but I'm also still going to go with no.
All right, here we go. David's answer is no. And David's correct. It's actually further apart though.
Huh.
79% of the 2,425 languages they surveyed lack an indefinite article. Only 12% had one.
Yeah, I guess they're just not as useful. I just thought because their pathway to grammaticalization is so simple.
Just from like one or whatever.
Usually just one. And so I thought, eh, why not? And I know of a language that has an indefinite but no definite. So I was like, eh, but no. Nah.
Mm. So even more natlings lack the indefinite markers. For some examples that do have it, because of course if they don't have it, they're just not going to have a marker in front of the noun or behind it. And so if they do have it, though, it can show up in a variety of ways. And Njunga from, this is Robson 2011 data, has this example of he built one house versus like one as in just he built house, any house he built. Whatever, versus he built a house indefinite, right? So I guess that top one is not whatever. The top one is like he built one house versus he built a house.
How about that?
Indefinite. And it is marked here. So like the sentence itself stays the same. Wu barki yo. Barki.
Wu barki yo.
There we go. So that is he built house. If you add man behind house as a separate unit, then that makes it the indefinite. So he built a house versus like, I guess like the house or something.
Yeah. Huh. Fascinating.
In Limbu, this data is from Von Dream in 1987. It attaches as a suffix, the indefinite marker does. And so like the other example, it follows the noun, but in this case, it actually attaches as a suffix. And so if you want to say, give me a rupee, you say the word for money followed by the indefinite marker to say a, and then the verb give. Yangvik parane. No.
Wait.
Pirange.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here and make a couple of guesses. One, since they're talking about rupees, I bet this is somewhere in the Indian subcontinent. So I bet that H is probably aspiration. So we have yangvik.
Probably.
Pirange. So give me a rupee. Then we have tik yang ladzok. It costs 1 rupee. And note, especially it's easy to see if you're looking at the screen, but we have the indefinite suffix dhik, which is like voiced, right? Because it comes after Angma, looks almost identical to Teak, which means one.
And probably is the source of that. And so, yeah, at the suffix that gives the indefinite, just like David had said, it's such an easy sort of route to grammaticalization. Take the number one, grammaticalize it, bam.
I'm still going to take the win on this one. 2 for 2.
Oh, you're going to take the win even though you were only like partially right?
I said no.
An example of a language lacking indefinite markers includes a lot of them, including Assiniboine. This is Cumberland 2005 data, where it's like you have a sentence with nouns like apple, table, onset, and it could be the apple is on the table or an apple is on a table or, you know, an apple is on the table. Like it could be just mix and match.
Are we sure this isn't a conlang?
David is laughing. Taspa, awotapi, akan, uyaka.
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 Uyaka. I don't actually know what
it's
that
little... It's retroflex.
A retroflex vowel?
Yes.
It's not a thing.
This, I don't know.
This is absolutely a con. Like, look at the word for hit. Upa.
I didn't know what to do. I don't know what to do with that. So yeah, it's what was in the data though. All right. So there you go. There's no markers. There's no markers. Those can be interpreted anyway.
Yeah.
Next question, David.
Mm-hmm.
Are nominal conjunction and the committative expressed by different elements?
Oh, I'm going 100% yes on this one. Well over the 50% mark. Let's see it. Show me the foxy.
You're correct, but not over 50%.
Dang.
And in fact, a whole bunch of languages need more work on this one. 27% of the languages that they have surveyed for this particular feature need more work because it wasn't clear in the grammars how they would express the committative most likely. Like they probably talked about conjunction, but they maybe didn't talk about that committative reading like with John or whatever. But then like... 44% of the languages do use different elements.
Well, sure, but just like, you know, when they're doing an election, I mean, you can look at what areas those 27% of languages are coming predict. And so I bet we could call a winner.
I mean, you got the answer, right? It's just you were a little too confident on your percentages.
Ugh.
Okay, so overall, different elements represent the committative and conjoining nominals in most natlangs. However, again, a lot of languages need more research. One that I thought was really cool, they showed this example from like older Turkish was actually the same particle and it was just a suffix. So they just gave this real quick example of like Mary Le John, which means Mary and with John.
Mm-hmm.
It could be either. So it's both conjunction and it's also a committative reading. Modern Turkish, however, borrowed ve, which specifically means and. And so now you're more likely to see Mary Le John when you mean like, you know, John with Mary versus Mary and John is going to be expressed by a completely separate word, ve, instead of a suffix, le.
Where did they borrow it from?
I actually don't know where they borrowed it from. It just noted that there was a borrowing and I may have missed the note.
It's a little too far. From wa in Arabic to have come from Arabic, right?
I don't know. I mean, wa and va are not all that far.
Yeah, you can't have a W in Turkish, so the W would go to V. It's just the vowel that gets.
But me. I mean, it also could have been completely influenced by the lay.
I suppose.
And so I don't know.
Okay, here we go. Here we go.
Oh my gosh. David is using Wiktionary on his phone, which means this is going to take a while.
Yeah, I'm just...
Okay, but as he's doing that, what I want to say is that... So modern Turkish was coded as, you know, using different elements. Older Turkish would have used the same. And it is indeed from Arabic.
Wow. Okay. All right.
And so that was a cool little thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Another fun example was this male example from Amha 2001, where it's actually the same element. And so it is the suffix na. If it's only used once, though, it means with. If you use it twice, so on two different nouns, then it means and.
Really?
And so here in the top example is I saw the chief with the woman. And so you get tani, I, sugatsi, chief, lalelona, woman with.
The na.
Lalelona, with.
Yeah.
Zagene, saw. Now, what changes in the next sentence, you still have lalelona with that na, but you add the na to chief as well. And so, then it means I saw the chief and the woman.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
That is cool. Wow. That's a really nice idea.
And this one, by the way, in case you're wondering, it was coded as having the same element for both, because even though the number of times it appeared differed in the two different contexts, it was the same unit. It was the same suffix. And so it was coded as having the same one.
Mm. I think that's a little misleading, but I'll take it.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not in charge of the GB.
Okay, next question. Is there a difference between inclusive and exclusive?
No.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and say this one shocked me. 51% of the languages showed that there is a difference between the inclusive and exclusive.
Okay, but 4% are still out. This thing can tie.
It's 45% to 51%.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And so, so slightly more noutlings distinguish inclusive we from exclusive we. The data here, I didn't pull examples because it was less exciting because it was literally just charts. And so it was like, well, you know, you can go look at the charts.
I want to take a look at that data because you can do some really mousy things and count, you know, I bet they could say that English does, because you can say, you know, you and me, you know, versus, you know, we but not you. Like, you never know how they're counting it.
Well, you can check it out for yourself. If you do want to check it out, it's feature number 28.
28.
And so you can go check that out. Okay, so sticking with pronouns for a little bit. Is there a gender distinction in independent third-person pronouns? And this includes gender noun class distinctions in the language's demonstratives.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. Because essentially, right, you have all of Europe, the Middle East, Africa. Actually, no. I'm going to say no.
Okay, so David's going for absent, and he's correct.
Yeah.
So 74% of the languages surveyed, so that's over 2,400 languages, 74% of them lacked a gender distinction in independent third-person pronouns. And again, that includes the demonstratives, and that includes noun class as well. So remember that when we talk about gender distinction, what we're talking about from one language may be formally called gender, but in another language be called noun class. And so it isn't marked in most languages.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I remembered. So Swahili is just a nice representative of Bantu. And of course, there's plenty of noun classes. No distinction in the third person pronouns. So it's like, you might think like one way of doing it would be like, oh, well, you know, if you have all these different noun classes, then you have to have a different third person pronoun for each one of those noun classes. But I think they have so many, they're just like, nah. And they're not even related. If you look at the third person singular pronoun, it's like not even related to any of those noun classes. And so I figured, you know what? Probably most of the languages like that are that way.
Well, you did some good figuring. Mm. Good job. Most natlings lack gender distinction. That was the summary of that.
Mm-hmm.
And now another pronoun question. Is there a dual or unit augmented form in addition to plural or augmented in the pronoun system? So in other words, is there a special way to refer to a dual pronoun in the language separate from, you know, singular plural distinction?
I mean, here's the thing. That's one of those over time answers. Because that's a hard yes if you go back 1,000 years.
These are modern.
Nowadays, I'm going to say no.
And indeed, 72% of the languages lack a dual form in the pronoun system. And so that was out of 2,394 languages, so a nice sample size. So yeah, most of them do not have that dual in their pronoun system. And I think that was the last pronoun question.
I'm going to throw out a guess here. Like, I'm thinking about something like Arabic, which has dual forms for all of its verbs and separate dual pronouns. But the thing is, like, if you think about that, often where you're going to make this special distinction, it's usually for human beings, right? Because that's where, you know, it might matter and you might care. If it's for inanimate objects, you don't care as much. And the thing is, how often do you refer specifically to two people or about two people? It's just not that common. I think eventually these things drop out, and the kids just stop using them, just start using the plural.
Those kids ruin everything.
Yeah.
All right, moving away from pronouns into demonstratives. And this is one
Ooh.
we had recently talked about. Are there three or more distance contrasts in demonstratives? This is feature 35. And so three or more. So we're not interested. If it's got one or two, a two-way distinction like English has, it's coded as being absent because we need three or more distance contrasts.
So English doesn't count.
Well, it's absent. It counts, but it would be a
No,
no.
but we used to have you know, here, there, and yonder.
Well, it's not used to. Like that example of Turkish that I showed you, older Turkish would have been coded one way, but they coded modern Turkish because that's what they're looking at.
Okay, so you don't think that we have yonder in English?
Not productively.
All right, then I'm gonna say, you know what? I'm still gonna say yes. I'm still gonna say yes.
Okay.
Yes is common.
And David's wrong, but barely. This one is almost even.
Oh my, tell them the numbers.
I will, I
All
will.
right.
So, out of the languages surveyed, 46% of them lack three or more distance contrasts. So the answer is no, 46%. But 44% have it. And we're talking about a difference of what is that, like 44 languages? No. Wrong way, like
Look,
39 languages or
it's
something.
1,111 versus 1,075. And there's 242 that are unknown. This has
Yeah.
got to be like one of the easiest things to figure out when you're studying a language. Who are these 242 linguists? Like, what are you doing? Come on. Come on. This is like one of the first things that you find out.
David's
Oh,
upset. And I did my
yeah.
math way wrong. I missed 100 languages in there somewhere. No, so don't listen to my math earlier when I was like 39. I was like just throwing out numbers like gibberish. No, there's almost 100 languages difference here.
What are you talking about?
I'm trying to do math in my head and it's not working, but from 075, there's like what 40 languages? I don't know. I'm
Here.
so off on my ability to look at
It's
numbers right
not
now.
that
Which
many.
is really sad because I normally am really good at math. It's just at this moment, I'm looking at numbers and my brain is like, I'm just done.
Look.
It was 36. I was so
Yeah.
close with my gibberish numbers. Never mind. Oh my gosh, I've taken you down a tangent of nothingness. And so, slightly more Natlings lack three or more distance distinctions in their demonstratives, but it is close to an even split. So, an example from a language that does have three or more distance distinctions is Dayore. And this research comes from Gabby 2006, where you have a three-way, whether it is speaker proximal, and that demonstrative marker is in, with like NH at the end there. You have addressee proximal, which is oop. And then you have a distal, so it's not close to either, is ease
Yeah, that's
or eat.
cool. I've never actually seen one of those in a natural language.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I mean, we've done it. I've done it plenty of times, but because it seemed reasonable, but I don't think I've ever seen one.
And their demonstratives, by the way, follow the nouns that it's working with. And so yeah. So that is an example there. Yeah, that one was actually, so David's pointing to an example where it's like literally the word was defined in all capital letters as if it was a noun class rather than an actual noun. And it was just defined as meat. But then if you look at the translation, it was animal. So it's like that animal is in the sentence glossing meat. That.
You know why? I bet they don't have a word for animal.
And it's just the noun class marker that's... Yeah. Because if you look up above, these things belong to my children. That's the first example. It has a yuk, which is defined as like a class meaning thing. And then followed by the word warmin, which means thing. I think this one is... This one feels very much like an Australian language. I may be wrong. Yeah. But it looks... It reads to me as if it is one. Mm. But anyway... I can look at David and say, "Pam it, koming mintur," and that means that man has a nice face.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you.
Most natlings, by the way, also lack visible, non-visible, and elevation distinctions in their demonstratives by a much higher margin.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's going to be rare.
So those are features, too, though, in the list. So you can go in and look at visible, non-visible, and then also elevation distinctions to look at data and information of languages that do have those distinctions. That wraps it up for demonstratives. Now let's talk more closely about nouns. Is there productive morphological plural marking on nouns? And this note is very important, so don't say your answer until I read this note.
Okay.
It restricts the yes answer. So if the answer is yes to this, there is productive morphological plural marking on nouns. Mm-hmm. That means it has a bound morphological marking. And so like a separate clitic or a separate word will not count.
Okay.
They also discounted reduplication strategies here because they are not considered separate morphological markings that could be productive and productively applied to other ones. And so they consider that different. And so keep that in mind as you answer this.
Yeah.
Because that can definitely sway what you're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, the reduplication really hurts. I'm not going to lie. But I can see why they would discount something like, most of the nouns in Hawaiian where plurality is done with a separate word that comes in front. However, they do have morphological plurals just from a very small set. I'm going to go ahead and say yes.
Okay, so David says, yes, there is productive morphological marking on nouns, and that is correct. About 53% of the languages surveyed had a productive morphological plural marking. Compared to 43% that did not. Mm. And so examples from a language with such markings included, they gave Swedish as an example, where the word for boat, you have, you
boat.
Know, boat, båtar is plural, in the indefinite, båten in the definite Bolton. Singular, båten, versus båtarna in the plural definite.
Yeah.
Whew. So that R is added, which I thought is cool because the plural marker is added before the definite marker. And so you can see that ordering in the plural definite form.
Yeah.
That R suffix comes right by the root. An example of a language that lacks bound plural markers includes Samoan. And so like the word for house is fale. And so if you're talking specific house, singular is le fale, where le is a separate word, plural is fale, and then non-specific like a house and, you know, some houses is se fale and ni fale. So again, like on the surface, it's like, but isn't that marking plurality? But because it is not a productive bound marker, it's coded as zero.
That's really weird. Hawaiian has he for non-specific, which is makes sense.
Sure.
Se goes to he, and it has na for plural, which is odd. It certainly doesn't have the bear for, that's something that just Samoan does. Na is always used for plural. And then it has ka and k for the specific, and that certainly is unrelated.
Yeah.
And hale is the word for house in Hawaiian. Hale, H, so the F going to H. Huh.
Nice. In case you're wondering, another feature you can explore is about singulative marking, and that for nouns is largely absent, as is dual marking. Mm. And so plural marking, if you are going to mark number on a noun productively, it's going to be plural, not singulative or dual. Is the ad nominal possessive construction different for alienable and inalienable nouns? Now, this one I pulled out specifically because mm-hmm. I think we had just recently talked about this in a live stream where we were like, how often does this actually happen where you have like that distinction between, you know, constructions for alienability and inalienability and possession? Mm-hmm. And so I thought this was a good one to pull out.
And I'm going to say it's not as common.
It is. So David is saying it's not as common, so it's absent. Not different. And you are right. By a small margin, 45% of the languages did not have different marking for possession. 40% did. And so, in other words, most natlings have the same strategies for both kinds of possession. So, for example, in Spanish, get all these examples like mi dedo, which means my finger, or el dedo de Ana, Ana's finger. Mi hermano, my brother, el hermano de Ana. Mm-hmm. Getting my vowels. Mm-hmm. That's Ana's brother. Mi libro, my book, el libro de Ana. Ana's book. Mm-hmm. So it's like it doesn't matter that Ana's finger is, you know, a little bit more inalienable than, say, her book. It's marked the same way. Mm-hmm. Languages with different strategies include Luiseño. Yeah. And so... this one was really interesting because it's like my sinew, like
sinew.
Sinew in your body is nota, but you have to add another marker if you mean that it's like, it's my sinew that I'm using for like a bow. So it's not like yep. from my body, it's like something I'm using to make a bow. So, you know, like from an animal. And so you add the key suffix and it completely changes where it is and what it's doing. It makes it alienable.
Yeah.
And so thought that was cool. So nota ki is the full thing there. Another example is from Nakanai. And so this one has a separate word if it is alienable. So la luma taku is my house, but my hand is la lima gu with gu as a suffix. And so it actually attaches right on. And so it looks like they could have come from the same source historically, because taku and gu,
oh.
maybe?
Oh, I think they're exactly the same source. I think gu is being applied to a generic noun there, and these things are in apposition.
Nice. And so that's kind of cool. In general, if you do distinguish alienability and inalienability, kin terms, so kinship terms, and body parts are considered inalienable by languages with different strategies. Hmm. And oftentimes, inalienable possession is marked in those languages, while alienable possession is unmarked, where it's more about word order and side-by-side constructions. And I thought that was really cool.
That is something that surprises me.
It surprised me too. It's like, but like they, you can go down the notes in the features when they, you can, you know, list it by language, and in the note section, it'll say like how it's marked. And quite a few of them have mentioned alienable possession is unmarked or determined by word order, while inalienable possession had like a special marking. Hmm. Okay. On to adjectives. Do core adjectives defined semantically as property concepts such as value, shape, age, dimension, do those adjectives act like verbs in predicative position? Mm. So in other words, do they have state of verbs for these kind of adjective?
Oh, I'm going to say that's absent.
Okay, so David's going no, and David is correct. Barely, 41 to 39% with a whopping 20% of languages needing more work. But you are right. I can't take that win away from you. So slightly more natlings do not treat predicative adjectives as verbs. An example of a language that treats them like verbs, so an example that does, is Bororo, and this data is from Cromwell 1979, where you can say imagore, that means I speak or I spoke, ikurere, I am tall or I was tall, where it's marked the same way, it's got all the same verb-y things, and tall is treated just like speak. An example of language that treats them differently, they gave Irish examples from Green 1966. So Dan, Sean means Sean went, but if you want to say like he was ill, you have to use that copular verb is brote e, where ill is, it follows the verb. So it goes verb, adjective, subject in those predicative situations. So there's that example. All right. So now let's talk about attributive adjectives, David. Do core adjectives used attributively require the same morphological treatment as verbs? So in other words, are they like participles or like little relative clauses? Do they need tensing or verb agreement, subject agreement?
What a strange question. I'm going to say no.
And no is correct. So this one is a much clearer example. 61% of the languages do not treat them like verbs. And so a language that treats them the same, to see an example here, Choctaw treats them the same, where if you say, I saw the tall man, tall as the attributive adjective carries a tense marker. And it's a suffix, this H at the end of chahah, that final H. What a way to mark tense. You see it there. You see it also in the sentence, the man is tall, where tall is the verb in that case. And so it's predicatively and attributively, it is tensed and treated like a verb. And so I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting.
So, but it really is like an example of how we did, that must have been in Sarkije, where we did like all relative clauses essentially for the adjectives. And so the adjectives, however they're used, end up getting verb treatment. A language that treats them differently, this one kind of cracked me up. They give this example of akha, and it's just like, nasiha yone, and it just means fish red. And it's like, you know, there's no marking on the red, so you can see it's not being treated as a verb or anything. But they didn't give any examples from this language with a verb. And I was like, well, how are verbs treated? I don't know. And so, treated differently, though. Okay, so this one I thought was really fun because it gets into case marking. And I think case marking is the last major area I go into in this little trivia game. Are there morphological cases for non-pronominal core arguments? So in other words, they got to be noun phrase, not a pronoun. And they got to be a core argument, so like subject, agent, patient, or subject object, depending on, you know, if you're a nominative accusative language, or ergative absolutive if you're not. To count, the marking must be bound, just like the plural marking. David's thinking. He is tapping his finger. His head is spinning.
Oh, gosh.
This is feature 70, by the way, if you want to go check it out on Grambank.
I'm going to say no.
And you are absolutely correct. This one shocked me. Shocked me. Not just shocked because it's absent. So morphological case marking is absent in more languages. But by the amount, because it's 62% of the languages surveyed lacked it to 33% on the other side. And that just really, I was like, for core cases, for those core arguments, I really thought there would be a bigger marking there. But no, most NatLinks actually lack marking for core arguments. An example of a language that marks everything is Warongo. It's just everything is marked. And so this sentence, my dog drank water. First of all, I would like to point out that the word translated as my is ngagongomaniyo. All of that means my. I mean, there's more going on there because it's like first singular, it's got like a genitive form, it's got an ablative markers for some reason, and plus an ergative marker to agree with the dog who is also ergative.
That's what we call suffix aufnahme.
I mean, it is, the longest word in the sentence is my. Dog is gando ngo, and then gamo is water, and then bia is drink. But yeah, that first word is huge, and it just means my.
Wow.
A cool example of core marking. occurs in Mundong. This is from Elders 2000. And I call this one cool because it's the plural marker that marks whether it's a core argument. So the plural suffix only shows up on non-subject elements on the nouns. So if it's a plural subject, it is not marked even if it's intended to be plural. Instead, the verb is marked with plural.
Yeah.
And so the examples here is I have seen the elephants, where elephants is not the subject. And so it has the ra suffix. That's the plural marker. So ba ra is elephants because it's not the subject. The other example was people slaughter a goat, where people is not marked. Za is just the subject noun. But the verb then carries the ra suffix. It's the same suffix, whether it appears on a verb or a noun. But again, because it's the subject that's plural, it gets shifted to the verb.
Yeah, this reminds me a little bit of austronation alignment, except with plurality. It's one of those things where it's like you'd think, honestly, you'd think a conlanger would come up with it. And yet here we have it in a language. It's pretty cool.
So cool. So cool. Mm-hmm. Speaking of cases,
yeah,
are there morphological cases for oblique non-pronominal noun phrases? Mm. In other words, not the subject, agent, patient.
Yeah, I'm still going to say no, but I think the percentage is going to be a lot closer.
And you're absolutely right. So the answer is still no. But now instead, if you recall from that core cases, it was 61%, I believe, lacked it. Now only 50% of the languages lack it for these oblique non-pronominal noun phrases. And so in other words, slightly more natlings lack those case markings. Examples from a language that does includes Warango because they mark everything. And so this sentence is let's sit down in the good camp. And in this case, good and camp are both marked with the locative case marker. And so, I mean, just so long. I mean, I should never be afraid of having long roots after seeing Warango.
I like seeing this, though, because it's like the let's part. It's just nothing there at all. It's so it's just nothing is on the verb. There's just we two. There's nothing in there about that's changing it from sit to let's. So it's just like, that's nice.
That is nice.
That's nice, you know.
I accidentally pushed the arrow to the next slide. Another example that marks oblique arguments is Zuni. And so, like, if you want to say he went to gallop, you would say kalapa queen with this suffix queen, meaning like a directive.
Yeah.
And then if you want to say, like, we stayed at their houses, you would use the on locative suffix on gakwe one. I don't know what the apostrophe there would be.
There's like a
really weird apostrophe.
There's a glottal stop there.
I know. There's like a glottal stop between a K and an A. I don't know how to treat that. But there's a locative marker. And then another example is num, which is from Bros 1988. And this one is cool because it's all tone changing. So if the tone is high, high, as in bugo, house, to say locative in the house, you do low, low, bugo. So bugo, house, bugo, in the house.
Wow.
Guyun, my stomach, guyun, in my stomach. And then if it's already low, low, as in gala, which is concession, gale, there we go. Then you change it to low high. So gale is in the concession. So I thought that was a really neat example. So for anyone working with tonal languages. So you may be asking yourself, well, cool. We played this trivia game. We found out that David more or less has a good read on what features show up in languages. So good job, David. You win. You win. But you may be wondering, like, what does this mean for you? What does this mean for your conlangs? Especially as you, like, go in and explore some features on your own, maybe. Like, maybe you want to go look at all 195 features that they currently have available on GramBank. Well, first of all, it doesn't mean much, actually, other than the fact that these features exist in languages, which means they're illicit things that you can consider including in yours. By no means do you have to like go through and be like, oh, it's the majority, so I guess that's what I need to do. Or, oh, I want this one to be so super strange. I'm going to go, you know, what's not in the majority for every single feature. Like, no, no, no. Really use it as a sounding board for understanding that like these features occur in languages. And like explore the examples, because the more you explore those examples, I think the more inspired you can get. and seeing things. Like, I can't tell you how excited I was about that plural example with the like elephant only getting marked if it's not a subject and then the verb getting marked otherwise. You know, things like that. It's like David had said, these are things you would think that could show up in a conlang, but then to see it in a natural language and to see how it's used, I don't know. It's like so exciting to me. And so all that is to say, this doesn't mean that it's going to change, you know, how you consider features for a language, but it sure as heck can inspire you to include some features in your own. Also, be sure to check out those examples. I just said that, and I forgot I made a whole slide about it. And so here we go, repeating myself. Check out the examples. They're super cool. So actually go into the features. High five. Go into those features, explore them, and have some fun. David, do you have anything to add before we sign off?
I feel like maybe there needs to be more research done on these languages.
Maybe especially on demonstratives.
Yeah, I really feel like that should be my victory. Oh, I want that one. Oh, well. Honestly, though, how do you not study that? How do you not study that? That's just silly. That's bare bones stuff.
This anyway. Is a great way to sign off.
Yeah.
David complaining. Yep. That his what was already a victory.
Right, that one. There was another one. I forget which one it was, but there was another one where I should have won.
Okay. But again, one. On the whole, you still won on the game. Whole.
Yes.
And so there's nothing to be taken away.
About time.
Anyway.
There's my implosives.
I hope you all have enjoyed this. And if you haven't checked out Grand Bank yet, I think you should. It's a lot of fun to explore and look at maps of features and learn more about languages. And so have fun. And until next time, stay grammar.